morning, everyone. I'm going to read some scripture, and it's from 2 Samuel chapter 11, if you'd like to follow along. The story of David and Bathsheba. In the spring of the year, when kings normally go out to war, David sent Joab and the Israelite army to fight the Ammonites. They destroyed the Ammonite army and laid siege to the city of Rabbah. However, David stayed behind in Jerusalem. Late one afternoon, after his midday rest, David got out of bed and was walking on the roof of the palace. As he looked out over the city, he noticed a woman of unusual beauty taking a bath. He sent someone to find out who she was, and he was told, "She is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam and the wife of Uriah the Hittite." Then David sent messengers to get her, and when she came to the palace, he slept with her. She had just completed the purification rites after having her menstrual period. Then she returned home. Later, when Bathsheba discovered that she was pregnant, she sent David a message saying, "I'm pregnant." Then David sent word to Joab, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." So Joab sent him to David. When Uriah arrived, David asked him how Joab and the army were getting along and how the war was progressing. Then he told Uriah, "Go on home and relax." David even sent a gift to Uriah after he had left the palace. But Uriah didn't go home. He slept that night at the palace entrance with the king's palace guard. When David heard that Uriah had not gone home, he summoned him and asked, "What's the matter? Why didn't you go home last night after being away for so long?" Uriah replied, "The ark and the armies of Israel and Judah are living in tents, and Joab and my master's men are camping in the open fields. How could I go home to wine and dine and sleep with my wife? I swear that I would never do such a thing." "Well, stay here today," David told him, "and tomorrow you may return to the army." So Uriah stayed in Jerusalem that day and the next. Then David invited him to dinner and got him drunk, but even then he couldn't get Uriah to go home to his wife. Again he slept at the palace entrance with the king's palace guard. So the next morning David wrote a letter to Joab and gave it to Uriah to deliver. The letter instructed Joab, "Station Uriah on the front lines where the battle is fiercest. Then pull back so that he will be killed." So Joab assigned Uriah to a spot close to the city wall where he knew the enemy's strongest men were fighting. And when the enemy soldiers came out of the city to fight, Uriah the Hittite was killed along with several other Israelite soldiers. Then Joab sent a battle report to David. He told his messenger, "Report all the news of the battle to the king, but he might get angry and ask, 'Why did the troops go so close to the city? Didn't they know there would be shooting from the walls? Wasn't Abimelech, son of Gideon, killed at Thebez by a woman who threw a millstone down on him from the wall? Why would you get so close to the wall? Then tell him Uriah the Hittite was killed too." So the messenger went to Jerusalem and gave a complete report to David. "The enemy came out against us in the open fields," he said. "And as we chased them back to the city gate, the archers on the wall shot arrows at us. Some of the king's men were killed, including Uriah the Hittite." "Well, tell Joab not to be discouraged," David said. "The sword devours this one today and that one tomorrow. Fight harder next time and conquer the city." When Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. When the period of mourning was over, David sent for her and brought her to the palace, and she became one of his wives. Then she gave birth to a son. But the Lord was displeased with what David had done.
Well, that's a bit of a shocking story, don't you think? I mean, it's hard to pull one off as bad as that, right? But yet, this is David, the king of Israel, who is said to have a heart after God. So, you know, it's surprising. And I think on another side, within the Jewish tradition, it's interesting that they maintained this story, that this story is part of the history books of 1 and 2 Samuel, which are key books. I mean, you think you might want to let that one go, right? Let's let that slip into the past somewhere. But instead, it's a major story, and next week we'll look at David's response when Nathan the prophet comes to him. So it is interesting that it's maintained and plays a key part. So the issue, of course, is what can we learn from such things? So I'm calling this tensions of human desire and power. If you remember the drama, every man, every person, speaking as a symbol for everyone in their lives, all of us in the human condition. So we note the tension between human desire and delight. It's part of this story. Human power and death. Foolishness, fear, and fidelity. And life under the blessing or life under the curse. So all of those major themes are part of this story. So as we enter into it, challenges to see how does that speak to us in our own human condition, whatever you're experiencing, I'm experiencing at this point, in our pasts, part of the story. So the story divides really into three parts. In the first part, what Darcy read, verses 1 to 5, what is the context for this? So if you go back to chapter 10, and I would encourage you to read a little bit of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, key history books in the Old Testament. In chapter 10, the Israel and David, they are at war with the Ammonites. And the Ammonites was a region east of the River Jordan, really part of what we would call Jordan today. And so the city of Rabbah, where they are fighting, is today the city of Amman in Jordan. So some of you have been there, I know. Well, that area, that's what we're talking about. So remember, the Davidic and later the kingdom of Solomon gets quite expansive. And so now they are over beyond what, you know, the 10 tribes of Israel are all about. They are now fighting in Jordan. That's chapter 10. And for some reason, I'm calling it David's empty hands, for some reason in chapter 11, he decides he's not going to go out to battle because it's the battle time, it's the kingdom, it's the spring season. Spring seasons, the wars would take place because the roads weren't so muddy, weren't so wet, things could move. And so in that season, a little warmer temperatures, the wars would start up again. And so normally David would be off leading the soldiers because he is king and that was expected. For some reason he doesn't do that. And he just stays back. And he sends Joab, who is his general, and who we see will do whatever David asks, no matter what the cost, to lead the people, his soldiers, in this battle. So, you know, we can wonder about that. What was going on in David's mind that he decided he wouldn't go to battle at this point? He would leave that for the others. That decision gets him into a bit of a mess. So as the story goes on, we see David in his royal power and in a time of self-indulgence. So self-indulgence can happen to any of us at any time, even if we have a heart after God like David. A time on our hands, idle hands, Proverbs talks about, and David acts out. And so on the palace at night, it's up higher, and he's looking down on the houses around, and he sees this woman who is bathing. And he desires her, even when he finds out that she is the wife of a leading soldier, Uriah the Hittite. And by the way, in the scriptures, in the Old Testament, every time Uriah is mentioned, it's Uriah the Hittite. And we'll explain why. So, and Uriah is listed in other listings in the books of Chronicles and Samuel. You'll see Uriah listed. He was one of his leading soldiers, one of his main guys. So even when David finds out who this woman is, note she's not named, he still decides to follow through on his plan. So we don't know, right? We don't know, is this a one-off? The text tells us that it happens one night, but maybe this has been a sequence. David's been hanging around, maybe this has been going on for a number of weeks, where he peers down and he sees this woman who is bathing. Maybe Bathsheba knows. We don't know. We don't know all the background to this story. We just hear about this one event. And so we are told then that David sends for her, and the story goes as we know it. It's interesting that that verb, to send, is used repeatedly through this whole story, through 11:10 and 11:12. David sends. It's David in his power. David can do whatever the heck he wants. He sends and it happens. He's king. He can make anything happen. It's a little bit like in the States right now with Donald Trump in some ways, right? Trump has got this great majority, does he not? Controls all the houses. He can do basically what he wants. He yells out, we're going to have tariffs, and we're just going to do it. That's it. Nobody's saying, well, whatever. Right? He pretty much, at least this stage in his time, gets what he wants. Well, David's like that. Sleeps with her, sends her back. Just like that. Just dismisses her. David in all his power, and she has no power. Sends her back. And the first time we hear her speak is she becomes pregnant, and she tells him, sends him a note that this has happened. That's the first we hear of Bathsheba. So it's presenting to us a king in his power, and a king who is not afraid to wield it and indeed abuse it. And he takes advantage of this situation. When? Probably he should be out leading the soldiers in battle, and he's not. So David here is presented as a taker. He can do what he likes. Take, 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 take. So he takes her. So it's a dark story, and we, you know, David's in control. He wants more. It's like people who are billionaires, and they still want more money, more money, more money. Why do you want more? Just because they can, they want more. Or you have power, you want more. Putin clearly wants more power. Russia is this massive country. The last thing he needs is more real estate. He doesn't need it. It's a massive, it's huge, biggest country in the world. But yet he wants a little more. In fact, he wants a lot more, doesn't he? So you want power, you want stuff, even though you don't really need it. That's the story as David is presented. So it is a shocking story, and we'll get more shocking even as we go. But it presents to us in our weakness. David, even though he is a man after God, is weak. If you look up at Romans 23, what does it say? It says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Everybody. Everyone. Everyone is messed up. You and I are messed up. We are all messed up. We've all sinned, have we not? Paul says we have all sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So, in that sense, then, we're not surprised that David has sinned. Psalm 51 is his confession. We just sang it. So no one is sinless. We are all sinners. And that fact points us to the idea, to the truth, that we need someone then who can save us. We can't save ourselves. You can't and I can't. Someone else needs to save us. Someone else needs to be the liberator. In Bolivia, Simon Bolivar, in every town and you go throughout the country of Bolivia, there is a big statue of Simon Bolivar, the liberator of Bolivia. You'll see it in every city. But our liberator is Christ, because we cannot do it on our own. No matter how dear, no matter how special people are, how beautiful people are. Doreen Showers, I love Doreen Showers, 99 years old. But if you talk to Doreen, if she was here, she would recognize, you know what, I'm a sinner just like you are. We are all sinners. We've all messed up. I remember talking to my mother and saying, Mom, you are a saint. And her word back to me was, I have not always been a saint. So I'm looking at my dear little mom and I'm thinking, like what? She says, I have not always been a saint. So in our histories, we've all screwed up. And this story reminds us that because of that, there is a greater need. We may not want to recognize it, but we cannot do it on our own. God creates a situation where He works for us. He does it. He redeems us. He makes us pure. He draws us out of sin. It's like you're caught in a strong current in a river and you are gone, man. The current goes beyond 3 knots, 3.5 knots. You cannot swim against it. Forget it. You cannot do it. You can hold your own for about 30 seconds, then you're gone. You cannot fight it. And it's like that for you and for me. We cannot fight it. God needs to work, and He has done. And that's the good news, and we call it grace. God's grace. So David, doesn't he? Doesn't he in Psalm 51? And in, we'll see it next week in 2 Samuel chapter 12. He cries out to God, please save me. I have done despicable things. Help me, save me, liberate me. And so the psalm says that, and this text says that to us. So I encourage you, whatever is going on in your life right now, that you can look to God, and He can lift you up, redeem you from whatever. He can do that. He's done it. He's done it for David. He will do it for us. So it's grace. It's a story of grace, His story of mercy and kindness. Chesed, that word, God's loving kindness for you and for me, expressed for us. So that's the first part of the story. David's descent goes even farther. He decides now, well, Bathsheba's pregnant. That's going to be known quite shortly. So we need somehow to cover this thing up. So he tries to cover it up by bringing Uriah back from the front. He knows Uriah. Uriah has met him before. David asks, you know, how's it going in the battle? Makes conversation. How is it going? Are we winning? Are we losing? Uriah the Hittite fills it in, fills David in. But that's not really what David's after. David wants to send Uriah home, have a couple of days relaxed off, be with your wife, because he wants to cover up the paternity of this child. So he knows that if Uriah goes home, they will sleep together, and then that can become the father of the child. This is all the cover-up plan of David, King David. However, Uriah won't do it. Uriah won't go back because he's a good soldier, and the ark, he mentions the ark that comes to us from Moses is brought out into battle. It's out there in the war, in the fields, and he just can't go home and just be nice and relaxed and pleasure himself when things are at risk, so he won't do it. You see that in verse 10. So he doesn't say no, but he just doesn't go home. He sleeps at the front of the palace where the other palace guards are sleeping. He just joins them. David hears about it, talks to him, and says, well, why didn't you do it? Uriah explains. Then David decides, well, you know what, I'll get him drunk. The story just keeps going down and down and down and down. I'll get him drunk, and then he'll be out of his mind, and he'll probably go home. But guess what? He doesn't go home. He's drunk, but he's not out of his mind. And he does the same thing. He sleeps. So what does it show us? It shows us that Uriah, the Hittite, and the Hittites are Canaanites. They're not Jews. They are foreigners. Uriah the Hittite, that's why it's always noted, is not a Jew. Seems that he's a follower of Yahweh, but he is not born as a Jew. He's not part of the history of Israel. He, in fact, is an enemy, Uriah the Hittite. But Uriah the Hittite is more faithful than David the king. That's what's going on here. The Uriah the Hittite will follow through on his commitments, even when David the king won't do. So what does that say to us? Well, you know what? When we see other people, we don't always get it. I'm suggesting here that we need to be gentle with one another. Because we can critique each other, and we do, unfortunately, within the church, just as anywhere else. I was talking to Rebecca recently, and she has some situations, I think, with some local moms. And the moms were being very gossipy and being very negative to one another. And I was just reminding her, well, you know what? That reminds us that when you start critiquing the church, you go to any other kind of community, you're going to find stuff. She said, oh, yeah, okay, right, you're right. Be gentle with one another. We're called to do that because we don't know the backstories. Uriah the Hittite, see, people would have viewed him differently. He's not a Jew. He's a Canaanite. And in that time, in that period, that was negative. He's not one of us. So, there's critique. But we don't know. We don't know the backstory. So we need to be careful in that too. If you look up Romans chapter 2, verse 1, it reminds us not to judge one another. It's interesting, Romans 1, it goes on and on and on, right? You know it. Paul's writing, he's making a very dark case of humankind, Romans chapter 1. And he goes on, and he lists all kinds of sins, you name it, it's there. Then chapter 2, verse 1, it says, therefore you have no excuse where whoever you are when you judge others, for in passing judgment on another you condemn yourself because you, the judge, are doing the very same things. It's a critique. Be careful. We don't understand everybody. We don't get it all. Be compassionate. Be loving. Be kind. God is love. John boils it all down to God is love, does he not? Finally, God is love. So be loving, be kind, be gentle with one another, even within the community of faith. People can bug you. People can bug me, whatever. We're called to love one another. Be gentle with one another. Be gentle with Uriah the Hittite. David is not doing that. David is taking advantage. In fact, he's abusing others through his power. So can the story get any darker? Yes, it can, unfortunately. Because David is now seeing that Uriah won't play along. Now, we don't know if Uriah already suspects something. We don't know. We don't have that information. All we know is he won't go and do what David wants him to do here. And so now David calls Joab. Joab is his general. Joab will do anything for David. But we'll note he takes care of himself through how he does it. So David says, put Uriah on the front line right by the wall, and I know that he will be killed because the archers will shoot him. He'll be close enough, they'll kill him. It's a done deal. Interesting enough, Joab doesn't just send one. He sends a bunch of soldiers forward, and a bunch of them are killed. Because he knows, if I only send Uriah, then everybody's going to wonder, why did I only send Uriah? And that was a stupid move. And then it's going to come back on me. So I got to make it look better than that, so I'll send a variety of soldiers. And a number of them are killed. But not just one. Text goes on, Uriah. The letter goes back to David. Interesting enough, and Joab even includes a little story. And that story comes from the book of Judges. And it says, remember, there was a battle, and a woman threw something from the wall, hit one of our best soldiers on their head, and killed him. Remember that? And he puts that in there because he says, you are the one who's made me send the people to the wall. And so if they're killed, it's not on me, it's on you. He wants that in the public record, that he was not the general who made a stupid move and they were killed. He's protecting himself because he ends it by saying, but Uriah the Hittite was killed. And that's what David wants. And then what does David do? David encourages him and says, well, these things happen in battle. People fall, so don't worry about it. Just press on. The whole thing is just a lark. There's the story. You can look it up in Judges 9:53. It ends with Uriah is dead. A good man is lost. What a story. The story ends with Bathsheba mourning, but note there's no reference of David mourning. David is relieved. Bathsheba mourns. And then, eventually, he takes her as his wife. He's hoping the story will be just gone, but God is not pleased with the whole thing. So God has been silent in this whole story, right? Up till now. And so David has done all of this. The great king of Israel has acted out. But God has seen it, and he is not pleased. And so, yes, we've already said that we call on God and anticipate his grace, do we not? We do. God's grace for us. God's forgiveness. But nevertheless, God does see. He sees what we have done. And in fact, the Bible tells us that one day we will stand before him. It's hard to know how that's going to play out. Billions of people have lived on this planet, 8 billion right now, but the text says that every one of us at some point will stand before God. We think that's going to take a long time. Well, God's got all the time he needs. If it takes 1 billion years to do that, he can do that. We will all stand before him. And God the seer will see into our hearts and will know how it's gone. But that time we fall back on God's grace and God's mercy and God's kindness. But he is the seer. So the story ends there. What can we draw from it? Well, at the end of the story, we might wonder, if we were coming at this innocently right off the beginning, well, what happens now? Well, we know that King Saul, when he messed up, he was disposed of as king. He was just let go. That's it. You're out. And so maybe David is going to be let go. Maybe he's finished now. This sounds a whole lot worse than whatever Saul had done. So we anticipate that. David's royal perception of reality is not the same as how God sees things. Or our own understanding of reality. What does God see? We look to him. So David's power has skewed his sense of what's up. But God understands. No secrets. We see that in Psalm 51. God understands. God cares. You know, there's another story with David at the end of his life. He still acts out at different times, right? He takes a census of how many people will be in the whole country, and God has told him not to do that because it's an act of pride. How big is my kingdom? David decides to do it. And then later on, he's given three options. Well, you're going to pay for this. And what does the option is, well, let your enemies take vengeance on you, or I will do it. And David says, I'm going to trust in you. My choice is you, because you will be more merciful than my enemy. And that story plays out, and there are ramifications from that. A number of people die. So we finally fall back on God's grace and God's mercy, God's kindness. That's where this story, I think, finally leads. We'll see that next week in chapter 12. But it also is shown in Bathsheba, because Bathsheba's first child, this child that will be born, dies. But then there is a second child. And who is that child? Solomon. And the text tells us, 12:24, that God loves Solomon, loves this child who will be named Solomon, particularly loves this child. So David's union with Bathsheba has been just a great mess. And you would think, well, God, that's it, man, you're done. But he's not done. And in fact, one of the children becomes king, the greater king, who will build the palace and will build the temple of God, and ultimately is in the lineage of Jesus Christ. So God is able to turn around and bless, even when we think the whole story is done. You don't know. You don't know how God will use you and us as a church, even now, with whatever the history has done, right? Whatever's happened in 120 years or whatever. God's goodness, we sang about it. God's love, God's forgiveness, God's mercy. And God sees David and Bathsheba, ultimately sees them in their union, and blesses their child, and that child falls in the lineage of Christ, the human story of Christ. So it's interesting. A lot of tensions going on here. So can God work in your life? Can God work in your family's life? People maybe who you think the story is just too dark. Nothing good can happen there. And God's mercy can work in. In my Irish history, we had a cousin. And our cousin was involved in crime in Ireland. Made a visit over here. And I remember him talking. He was older than us, obviously, but he was a young adult, but he was involved in crime. And I remember saying, wow, that sounds exciting. What did you do? And his response is, you don't want to know. You're better off not knowing. He wouldn't tell us. Whatever happened to him? You know what? He dropped out of our history. I don't know. Probably was killed in some action. But can God work in that family? I ask myself. Sure. And what things have happened? What has opened up in our lives? So we trust, we depend, we lean on God. No matter what has happened, we look to Him. That's our invitation. Next week, we'll see this beautiful chapter where Nathan, the prophet who he listens to, comes and speaks to him. So these two chapters are linked together. But may we look to Him, continue to go to Him, whatever is happening in your life, and trust that God can bring good things in your life even now. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.